It's time now for Money Matters with the Lewis family. Doug, Linda, and Deborah, owners of Lewis Financial Management, a Raleigh-based family-owned financial planning firm providing financial advice since 1983. Doug and Deborah are certified financial planners, CFPs, who can answer any of your questions about investments, retirement planning, and estate planning. Call Doug, Linda, and Deborah at their office, 919-872-7000, with your financial planning questions. That's 919-872-7000. Now, here are Doug, Linda, and Deborah.
Investments offered through SFA Inc. Investment advice through Lewis Financial Management. SFA Inc. and Lewis Financial Management are not related entities. And we are the Lewis family, ready to answer your questions tonight.
This is Linda Lewis, and thank you for joining us on Money Matters on News Radio 680 WPTF.
And I'm Doug Lewis, Certified Financial Planner.
And I'm Deborah Lewis, Certified Financial Planner. And we're here to answer your questions for the next hour.
Debbie, this is Doug Lewis, Certified Financial Planner. How can I help you, Debbie?
Hi. Yes, my husband and I are actually driving to dinner, and I am listening to your program, and we have a lump sum of money to invest for our daughter, and we wanted to know what the best way to do that is so that she has income over her lifetime.
How old's your daughter?
Our daughter is 35.
35. And what's the amount of the lump sum?
It's about $100,000.
Is this her first investment, or has she done any investing at all?
A little bit of investing, but she's not.
Is she married or single? Tell us a little bit about her situation.
She's not married. She has a boyfriend, and they're thinking about getting married, but it's not current because he has to finish his program studies. And and she has a business of her own, and we just are trying to make decisions of where to put about $100,000 for her.
Well, so you want to make a gift to her of $100,000 and have it invested in her name?
Well, actually, it's her own money.
Oh, where'd she get $100,000 at age 35?
From her business.
Oh, she's got a high income.
She did, but currently it's not as high as it was before.
All right, what she needs to do, first of all, there's no quick answer. The people that give you a quick answer are trying to sell you an investment. Somebody will say, oh, she needs to buy an annuity. Well, that's about the worst thing she could probably do. Or she needs to go ahead and put the money into an index fund. That's another worst thing she could do. Or, there's no one answer. What she needs is proper advice. And advice is what we, the Lewis family, do all day long, year after year in our offices. We need five pieces of information from her for an appointment to meet with her to give her advice. And the five pieces of information we call the five keys.
And so probably we'd want to look at her tax returns and federal and state, the most recent returns. Then a list of assets and liabilities.
That's key, too.
So that's whatever she owns and whatever she owes. Like if there's any value to her business, if she owns real estate, any stocks, bonds, mutual funds, any investments, cash accounts, 401ks, IRAs, etc. And then any of her credit card debt or mortgage.
Well, that's all part of
her liabilities.
Key two, yeah.
The third key would be her projected income for this year. Number four, it would be what's being withheld from her for her taxes from her paycheck or quarterly estimates. And then lastly would be her living expenses.
Right. Those five keys that Linda mentioned, financial statement, tax return, living expenses, and
income,
in projected income and taxes paid. Those five keys are what we require or request come into our office before the meeting.
Call me, Deborah Lewis, Certified Financial Planner at Lewis Financial Management. 919-872-7000. 919-872-7000.
And then during the meeting, there's an advisory consultation which she will have with myself or Deborah, but a certified financial planner that will go ahead and look at everything and then make it's much more difficult
yeah,
than
here's
just
what I was gonna
how do
add.
I invest $100,000.
Debbie, here's what I was going to add was is she makes an ideal financial planning client because she's young enough to really maximize this $100,000. While it may not be a repeated annual income of $100,000 that she'll have set aside or the ability to set aside. Oops, hold on just 1 second. Okay, and sorry about that. But while she may not have repeated $100,000 per year, at the same time, this is, at age 35, an opportunity to have this invested for possibly the next 30 years. If that makes a big dent in what she can accumulate for her retirement savings, this will be huge. But the way this doesn't get mishandled is proper financial planning with a certified financial planner. So I would say call me at the office, 919-872-7000.
Give her time to write that down, Deborah.
I will. I'm going to say it again.
I'm driving.
Sorry. That's fine.
Just remember 919-USA-7000.
Oh, USA-7000. I can remember that.
Okay.
The thing is that you said not to invest in an index fund, and I was looking at Vanguard 500 index as a possible purchase for some of that money.
Yeah, well, see, you have no logic behind. I mean, that's like throwing darts at a ball.
We need to put some analysis and then pick.
Yeah, you don't just say, I think I'll go ahead and buy this. That's the way people lose money. Those same people that put that money in that very fund in 2008 lost 50% of their money.
Whoa.
So, yeah, from the high to the low, that was a 50% drop. So it's not a matter of what's the right investment. It's a matter of what's the right plan, planning.
Yeah.
And I think if she gets that in her head, and I like Linda's reminder, it's always 919-USA-7000.
I guess the only thing that was Debbie, you said what I was thinking about investing for her, it doesn't sound like she would be the client. I mean,
No, we need her to come in.
I mean, it's your daughter who would be, I think,
she's the one
making the appointment.
In. Yeah.
I mean, y'all could come with her, of course, but.
My husband is laughing because she never invested any of her own money.
Yeah. So she needs to be educated first and foremost on just financial planning. But Debbie, I would say give me a call, 919-872-7000. Our engineer, I'm sure, got your phone number before you came over. So if you have some time after the show, I'll call you back or leave me a message at the office, and we'll get her started in the right direction.
Well, thank you very much.
And just get her to write down any specific questions that she has or that you have for her. Okay? Have a wonderful week. You're listening to Money Matters with the Lewises on News Radio 680 WPTF.
If you'd like further information, call us at 919-872-7000 or go to our website, DougAndLinda.com. That's DougAndLinda.com.
Cash flow planning isn't only for the young or the old. The 65 years old with $3 million or the 35-year-old with only $100,000, cash flow planning touches everybody.
For the rest of our lives.
That's right. What else is new, Deborah, in the world of cash flow planning?
Well, you know, I always like to come back to the people who are just beginning. And there was a real interesting article in one of the papers that was talking about the extra 1% of pay saved can really add up. And I think what they wanted us to see was is that, you know, when you're in your 30s, just like this lady's daughter before on the call before, you have the power of time. 1% can make a big difference because there's this thing called compounding. And a little bit of extra savings today can go a long way tomorrow.
All right. Well, let's play with some numbers then for a second. Let's take a 25-year-old with a $40,000 salary.
Okay.
And let's say they just set aside 1%. That's $33 a month.
Okay.
Okay. So what happens to that over their lifetime if they just do that little $33 a month?
Well, that would...
What could it grow to be, assuming?
Okay.
Assuming. Yeah. Uh-huh. We have to assume something.
All right.
Let's not assume like the S&P 500 or what we just talked about. Let's just assume 7%.
Okay. Something realistic. All right. And conservative. All right. So let's use 42 years... Because that would be, if we're going to use full retirement age, that'd be 67. And if she is 25, mm-hmm. that gives us 42 years.
Mm-hmm.
If we're doing $33 per month,
mm-hmm.
that's, and we're using 7% annual interest, that's going to be $100,442.
Oh, okay. $100,000 is that little $33 a month, that 1% of a $40,000 salary.
Right. It could add up to $100,000.
Okay. Now let's compare. Let's say they didn't do anything and they waited till they were 45 years old, but now they had a $70,000 salary. Now 1% of that $70,000 salary, which is only going to be $58 a month.
All right. And if that's only for 22 years, still using 7%, you're going to only have accumulated $36,000.
Big difference. That's the point you're trying to make. Time compounding.
Absolutely.
The time value of money compounding.
That's right. 33 years over 42 years will get you $100,000 using those that example. $58 a month over 22 years is only going to give you over $36,000.
Well, you know, in our practice, we always say that you should consider as best you can 10%, maybe 15%
of your income. Yes.
So let's use that and say, now let's go back to that 25-year-old. The 25-year-old put 10% of their salary.
All right, that's going to be $4,000
right.
over 42 years at 7% interest. Wow, they could have $922,000.
Almost $1 million.
Almost $1 million.
And that 10% that I wanted, that $4,000, that can be split. Maybe the employer puts in half
so
of that.
So true. So let's say they're only setting aside $2,000. The employer's matching the other $2,000. And in 42 years, they could accumulate almost $922,000.
All right. Let's go a little further.
Okay.
Let's take 50. Like, you know, Susan, was her name, Susan?
Debbie.
Debbie's daughter, Susan?
No, she didn't say
anyway,
her name.
The lady was Debbie.
Right.
And she had a daughter. But this could be any young person.
But my point is, single people, generally, they can do more than 10% because
That's right. You can squeeze out 15%. So
and
if I punch in the same numbers,
we've got a lot of clients that do
that. Let me use the same numbers, 15%. If she's making, now should I use six, that would be $6,000. So $6,000 a year at averaging 7% per year,
mm-hmm.
that person would accumulate $1,383,000.
Look at that. $1.3 million.
You've just become a middle-class millionaire.
It can be done. And we have the pleasure so often watching the Lewis family has been doing this in our office. We're watching people all the time grow and become these middle-class millionaires.
You're listening to Money Matters with Doug, Linda, and Deborah Lewis. Call to make an appointment with Deborah Lewis, Certified Financial Planner of Lewis Financial Management. Call 919-872-7000 or visit our website, DougAndLinda.com.
Lee, this is Doug Lewis with Money Matters. How can I help you this evening?
Yes, Doug. I'm looking for just a referral because questions would take too long on the air as to who to talk to about financial planning in retirement.
Well,
I'll refer you to my wife.
That'd be fine.
Well, I'm not exactly a planner myself, but I can send you some information.
That'd be fine.
What's important?
I'm a young professional, 32 years old, and making quite well, especially since I was born poor, but want to invest it and don't want to just spend it and don't know who to go to.
Well, Lee, one of the things that's important is to work with a certified financial planner like Doug. And it's important to look at the credentials and the expertise. And then it's also important for you to look at what are your questions and what are your needs. But if you'd like to call the office at 872-7000, I'll be happy to send you some information.
872-7000?
Right. What is your situation?
I have multiple questions. You know, where do you put money? I'm saving about $30,000 a year. And I've got about $300,000 worth of real estate. And so what do you do?
Okay.
Well, you start with a financial plan, Lee.
Yes.
you start with the living expenses. Basically, we identify the living expenses and the living expense needs. Then we go from there back to the future goals. We want to find out the retirement age goal. You have children?
No, not yet.
All right, then
but
we don't
about
have
to be married. I got engaged this past week, so now I have to get serious.
All right. Well, financial planning for single people is even more delicate because of the tax situation.
Right.
And we do a series of analyses on the taxes, on the cash flow, on the estate, on the retirement, And then we start with the living expenses and we move everything against that one number. Then we do future values and discount back to present values. Then we do an asset allocation model, determining according to the client's risk tolerance, what investments should go in what types of vehicles. And we start building a make-believe portfolio on paper first. And then together, if the client and the planner are comfortable that way, then we start the implementing. And I know that was real fast, but that's the overall methodology.
That sounds like what I need to hear. And we would do that in conjunction with, for instance, 401ks that I've got self-directed.
A good planner should encompass everything in your financial life, your 401k. He should tell you whether you're overinsured or underinsured. He should look at your estate. He should review your wills. He should go ahead and look at your personal investments and your retirement investments, and also your living expenses, your cash flow, and your income taxes.
Okay. Well, that's sort of what I knew, and my question was way too long for a radio talk show, but I need to know where to call. So,
congratulations, Lee.
I suppose it's a little frightening, but it's fun.
Okay.
Well, it's really fun taking a control of your financial world. I have so many people that come to see me who are in their 70s, and they say, boy, I wish I had done this 40 years ago. It's excellent that you're looking at it while you're young, and I commend you, Lee. You should be working with a financial planner, whether it be me or someone else.
Of course, the biggest myth was that the diamond salesman told me that the ring was an investment.
Right. Yeah. So did the guy who wants you to buy the place at the beach and everything else. Everything's an investment.
I bought that one too.
Lee, thank you for calling.
This is Deborah Lewis, certified financial planner at Lewis Financial Management. Our number at the office is 919-872-7000. Call me at 919-872-7000.
Well, Doug, from the financial planner's viewpoint, once we know the risks of a fund, how do we know what risks are suitable for a client?
That's a great question, because the question of describing risks in mutual fund prospectuses is only half of the story. The other story is, what about the person? And each person has a different, what we call, risk tolerance, Linda. And in the financial planner's viewpoint, there should be an analysis of the risk tolerance. Now, there are actually 9 levels of risk, according to the way I practice financial planning. In my office, I identify 9 levels of risk, and we want to find out where the client is in that risk spectrum. In searching for your risk tolerance, you should find out what's the highest risk tolerance on the scale of 1 to 9 that you can handle, because the greater the risk, the greater the potential reward.
Right. So you need to determine what is your level of risk.
Right. Where is the highest level of risk that you're comfortable at?
So what is the first level?
The first level of risk? Well, it's level one. A person who's at level one says, I don't like risk at all. I want to sleep well at night. Don't care about interest rates. Don't want to lose my money.
So it's very conservative.
That person is almost paranoid.
Right.
Okay. Afraid banks are going to collapse and so on. Keeps their money under their mattress. All right. That's lowest level of risk. Level two is a person who says, I don't like risk, but I'd like to get higher than money market interest.
Okay. What's the next level?
Level three would be a person who says, I'm willing to accept some risk to get a higher yield, but high safety is still important to me.
Okay. The fourth level.
Level four investor says, I'm a conservative investor. My priority is protection from loss, but I'm willing to take enough risks to get higher income.
Level five?
Level five on a spectrum 1 to 9 is a person who says, I'm willing to take middle of the road risk to achieve better results with medium safety. You still ready to go higher?
Yeah, let's go to level six.
Level six person says, I'm willing to take a little more risk than average, but I don't expect the level of loss to be very high. I'm looking for investments that will outperform inflation.
Level seven.
A person who wants to try a little higher, a level seven, would say, I can accept a more volatile investment. However, I don't want to lose my entire investment.
Level eight.
An eight is a person who says, I'm willing to use high leverage to achieve greater profits, but I recognize that the possibility of loss is great.
And the ninth level?
Ninth level is a person who says, I'm a speculator. I can accept high leverage, quick action. The entire investment can be lost, but I want the profit potential to be very high.
Okay, so there we have it, the 9 levels of risk.
And we just find out what's the highest level a person is comfortable with, and their comfort level identifies what type of funds they should be going into. Does that help your question about how to evaluate from the planner's viewpoint?
Yes, because, you know, people know inside in their gut feeling how they feel about when they go to invest, how they're going to feel if something happens. And are you going to be able to sleep at night? Or are you willing to take the middle of the road risks so that you can achieve better results with medium safety? Correct? And then, you know, then you have the conservative investor who feels like, well, my priority is protection from loss, but I'm willing to take enough risk to get a higher income.
Right.
And if we can be of more assistance to you, you can call me at the office during the week. And the number in Raleigh is 919-872-7000. That's USA 7000.
Don, this is Doug Lewis, Certified Financial Planner. How can I help you?
Yes, sir, Doug. I've been in your office, and I met you, and I appreciate what you do.
Oh, thank you very much.
And you have a nice wife, too.
Well, that's a given.
I'm getting some points here. Okay, I'm a real estate broker, and I've got a couple questions.
All right.
I have a couple older people that have property with very little base in their real estate.
Right.
Maybe $300-$400 an acre or something like that. And
uh-huh.
We're looking at a sale of maybe $17,000-$18,000 an acre.
Mm-hmm.
What can they do? They want to carry the paper and have an income. What can they do about these capital gains taxes and the taxes on the property as such? They're 60, in the early 60s, but they are retired.
Well, let's see.
One set of them are.
If there's no debt on the property right now, we can solve that one.
There is no debt.
All right. Here's what they can do. They're in their early 60s. And the sale price of the property is how much?
Well, they're about 62 years old, and the sales price of the property would be like $135,000.
Okay, so we have $135,000 asset.
Vacant land,
and we have basically no, very little basis in it.
Yeah, very little, maybe
$10,000.
Yeah.
And so obviously their accountant has told them, wait a minute, if you sell that thing, you're going to have $125,000 long-term capital gain.
Okay.
So obviously that's a bad situation for them to move on. That's what's holding them back. Here's what can be done. First of all, why is it they want to carry a note on the property?
Well, they want to help out the people who are buying it because they're young. For one thing, they want to spread out the income for taxes. They feel like they just pay what they gather in on a yearly basis.
Okay. But let me ask you this. Can the people who want to buy it, can they get their own financing?
Well, I guess they could.
I mean, it can be done the other way, but quite frankly, it's better for the seller if he's got the whole lump, and that's because of the power of compounding. Now, here's what has to happen. They need to set up a Section 664 trust. Section 664 trust will ultimately pass what is placed in it to a charity. It may not be 40 or 50 years. Well, they're in their 60s. It may be 30-some years from now. But ultimately, what goes into this trust will go to a charity. Therefore, step one, they transfer the deed into the name of this Section 664 trust. Step two, the trustee sells the property to the buyer and pays no capital gains tax at all. Right away, we've saved the entire capital gains taxes.
Is that revocable?
No, it's not a revocable living trust. A revocable living trust is the exact opposite. That's revocable. This is irrevocable.
Okay.
This will work out wonderfully because a revocable living trust is established for the benefit of the person who sets it up. But this one is established, at least in the views of the IRS, for the benefit of some charitable institution, university, or nonprofit.
And are both of them retired, Don?
Both of them are officially retired. Yeah, they are.
All right. Now, once we do that, the trustee then sells the property, and the entire $135,000 would come back to the trust. It can then be invested to produce as high an income or as low an income as they want. Do you know, do they need the income now? Did you say the reason?
No, they both have retirement income. And they don't have any debt.
All right. Well,
it's just living expenses.
All right. Then if they don't need the income, it works even better for them because now that $135,000 can sit inside that charitable trust and it can be invested by the trustee in any investments basically they want. They could have it in plain old bread and butter, blue chip stock, growth and income mutual funds. They can draw all the income from that along the way. Not only that, they can be their own trustee, which is the only way that I would advise them to do it. That way they never give up control.
Mm-hmm. I do want to sit down with you and go over this.
You can call me at the office during the week. And the number in Raleigh is 919-872-7000. That's USA 7000.
Well, thank you both, and I will give you a holler and get with you.
Okay, very good. And take care.
What's new in the area of investment planning?
Well, Doug, some folks that have called in at the office want to know, what's wrong with index funds?
The index funds are really getting a lot of publicity today, and I guess the bottom line comes down to the question, should investors strive for mediocrity? Now, proponents of index mutual funds think that's what you should do. Index funds generally, Lynn, will match the performance of a specific market index by buying all or maybe a representative portion of the securities of that index, like maybe the S&P 500. It's a passive approach, and it contrasts with the many more actively managed funds that try to sort out the winners from the losers according to specific investing style. So that's basically what an index fund is. Isn't the idea to beat the market? So why invest in a fund that's designed to do no better than the market? Why should you strive for mediocrity? Well, proponents of index funds say that investors should consider adding them to their portfolio for several reasons. First, few actively managed funds outperform the market over the long term. Study after study does show the S&P 500 outperforming 80% of more of the actively managed stock funds. And that's a case in point.
Well, you know, Doug, because index funds are essentially passive funds that don't spend a lot of time and manpower trying to pick winners, their management fees are among the lowest of all mutual funds, right? Low fees mean that you get to keep more of your income and your profits as well, correct?
Yeah, I've heard that argument. And also people say because funds don't buy and sell a lot of securities, they don't spend much money in brokerage fees, and low portfolio turnover, which means the manager isn't buying and selling stocks, usually less than 10% a year, also means there's less realized capital gains and losses compared with a fund that turns over, you know, maybe 80% to 100% of its portfolio in a year. And this means lower tax costs for the investor. And also, I've heard it said that index fund investors know that they will at least track the market and they won't have to worry whether the fund is doing better or worse than the market. I don't know, Lynn. I guess while index funds do have their virtues, investors, in my opinion, really shouldn't rely solely on them. For one thing, actively managed funds, such as small company funds or sector funds, will outperform index funds during a given time. And there are funds that consistently can show that they have beat the market. I prefer to think of putting your money in the hands of a manager who's going to be managing the money, buying and selling, buying and selling. And so I, like many other certified financial planners, advise you to sort of stay away from the index funds. That's bottom line of my opinion.
Okay. If you have some information you'd like us to send to you, you can call at the office in Raleigh at 919-872-7000.
One more time.
That's USA 7000. I think it might be helpful for us to go over a retirement income needs checklist.
Let's do that. First, remember, analyze your present situation, your income, your expenses, your assets, and your liabilities.
Secondly, it's good to determine which of your expenses are likely to decrease after you retire and which are likely to increase.
Third, set your financial monthly and annual retirement goals.
Fourthly, find out how much you can expect to receive from Social Security, veterans benefits, as well as pension plans.
That's right, Linda. Fifth, estimate how much you should receive from the interest earned on savings, investments, and from real estate rentals.
Sixth, review your insurance policies to see whether they meet your present as well as your future needs.
Seven, know the amount that you must begin setting aside monthly and yearly to close the gap between your retirement income goals and your potential retirement income.
Eighth, try to pay off significantly large bills now to avoid facing them when you retire.
And ninth,
make sure that you've got sufficient health insurance coverage in place. These are the nine areas on the retirement income needs checklist, Lynn.
Doug, along with these issues, I've gotten a number of callers, in fact, consistently, people that are either having early retirement issues or early out. As people are getting older, they're being asked to leave or are retiring because it's time to do it,
mm-hmm.
or it's feasible. And sometimes they have a number of options that they can decide on. And what I was wondering, if you could give some advice for some of the people that are trying to decide whether or not to take a lump sum option or not.
The first thing is to decide whether we're talking about the qualified or the non-qualified portion. The qualified portion is the 401k plan, the 403b plan, the retirement lump, okay? The money that's been pre-tax, that's qualified money. And there are options that you have there. Everybody has options there. The second is with regard to non-qualified. Some companies offer you a lump of money or a check for the rest of your life. Some of them go ahead and offer you a lump of your salary and so forth. So we need to go ahead and talk about the differences between these two. Let's focus on the qualified portion. First of all, the qualified money is going to be offered to you in one of two ways. First of all, a lump that you can take, or in some cases, a monthly check. That's a typical pension option that you might have. I'm remembering one client, and he worked for a major oil company, and he was offered a $300,000 lump from his pension versus $1,700 a month. This was qualified money. If he chose the lump, he then was offered choices, and this is IRS ruling. Either you take it and pay tax on it under your normal income. So let's say a guy got a $300,000 lump from his qualified portion, and he has to pay taxes. He might lose $150,000 in income tax. Well, about $100,000 in income taxes by the time he pays taxes, federal and state.
Call me, Deborah Lewis, Certified Financial Planner at Lewis Financial Management. Call me at 919-872-7000. 919-872-7000.
Choice number two from the IRS, instead of taking that lump and paying taxes of about a third, he could take the lump, but not take possession of it. In other words, if you do not have what's called constructive receipt of the lump, you can move it from the present place. Let's say it's your 401k plan, or your, some companies call it a TDSP, the tax deferred savings plan or whatever. You can direct it to an IRA rollover, we call this. And then you pay no taxes on it. So in our little $300,000 guy's example, he could roll over the whole $300,000 to an IRA rollover account and have no taxes taken out. Now, why would he do that? Well, number one, of course, no taxes are taken out. But has he achieved anything? Yes, he's achieved a tremendous amount. Because once it's over there, he now controls it.
So that he can invest it to produce income, right?
Well, it's already invested where it was at. But the difference is he now controls the investments. He works with his own certified financial planner, develops an asset allocation model, selects the different investments that are suitable for him in the IRA, then from those investments, he starts taking the income out of that IRA. And what he's done is he's maintained total control. At his death, he now goes ahead and can leave the entire amount to his heirs, and he's lost nothing. Whereas doing it the other way, there's a big hunk taken out. If he took the first way of taking the monthly check, there's nothing left. This way, the entire amount goes to his children.
I think it's important, when people are considering retirement or being offered early retirement, that they go ahead and get those options in writing.
That's right.
So that they can prepare for whichever direction they decide to take.
That's right,
Lynn. But I think that that rollover is a wonderful vehicle for them, first of all, to avoid any immediate taxes. And then also, they're only being taxed on the income that they take out, right?
Right, right. Then, of course, if a person is not offered that lump sum at all, they're only offered a monthly check from their employer. In cases like that, they're offered choices of what the size of that check is, whether they want the largest check or whether they want the 50% survivor option check which is a smaller one, or the 100% survivor option check, which is an even smaller one. And some companies have about six different choices. So you really need to walk through your numbers in that case and find out which works best for you. We've seen all of them. And of course, those are the things that we try and help people with as they come to us with these questions. But you do need, like you say, to go through all of the pro formas and all the choices before you make any decision, not afterwards.
Very good.
The number at the office, if you'd like to call, is 872-7000. 872-7000. And I believe we have another caller.
Hi, Frank. How can I help you?
My question is this. I've been doing a lot of evaluating different types of investment opportunities. And I was talking to someone, and they said that if you pay off your mortgage, you know, on your properties, like I have two different properties. One of them is a rental property. One of them is my own home personal property. And both of them have mortgages on them. Now, if I go ahead and pay off my mortgages and use that as an investment, wouldn't I save like hundreds of thousands of dollars over the period of, say, 10 or 15 years?
This is a very interesting computation because you have three things there. It's very much like a seesaw. Whatever you do is going to have an impact on something else. For example, yes, if you pay off your mortgages, assuming you have the cash to do so, then you totally will save all the rest of that mortgage interest, and it can be hundreds of thousands of dollars depending on your numbers.
Right.
On the other hand, you also increase your taxes for all those years. So you've got a negative to factor in there by reducing outlay. In other words, all the savings that you made, you know, that's a plus. And then all the taxes you lose by doing this are a minus. So you've got those two components to the equation. First, you have to figure how much are the cash savings in the mortgage payments. Then you have to subtract from that the tax savings, which you lost by having no more tax deduction on the interest payment. Then number three, you've got to go ahead and take the cost of the money that would have been invested in an alternative investment that you used to pay off that mortgage. You've got to subtract that because that's lost also.
Right.
And you have to weigh these three things against each other to compare which way it turns out better for you. The variables in this situation are the alternative investments yield or income and the interest rate on the mortgage, if it's variable, and the tax rates. You do need a software to do that. I do that all the time for clients to help decide which way it's best for them. But You've got to keep the three components moving simultaneously to make the decision.
So sometimes it would be beneficial and sometimes it wouldn't.
I would say in most cases of people I have run, it is not beneficial to pay off your mortgages investment-wise.
I see.
Now, there are other reasons you might do so.
Uh-huh.
Comfort level, worry about your job being lost, and so on.
Oh, I see.
But comparing it to an investment, it's rare that the numbers work out to that benefit because you do get that income tax break.
Yeah, that's true. But then again, you don't have a house payment once once you're finished. I mean, that's gone.
That's true. So is the money that you use to pay it off and the income from that money. It's a push-pull situation. Frank, if you call me at my office, I can go ahead and work through some numbers for you a little better.
Okay.
Okay. Well, got another question for me?
No, that was it. I've just been doing a lot of thinking about that. I got a lot of extra money now, and I was going to go ahead and pay my mortgages off.
I would generally run the numbers first before you do that.
Okay.
Yeah, you want to be careful. My number at the office is 8727000, 8727000, and I can plug them into a software and run that for you if you like.
All right. Well, thanks a lot.
You're sure welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.
Well, Doug, at different points in a person's life, one will be concerned with different financial matters, and while it is true that different individuals will face these phases either earlier or later than other individuals, the cycle of issues proceeds in a fairly predictable pattern over a person's lifetime. Wouldn't you agree?
That's right, Lynn. You know, people who, for example, are in their 20s and 30s, for them, they need to establish solid financial habits since the money habits that they develop now will set the financial tone for the rest of their life. And now is a good time for them to set up a record-keeping system and monitor your cash flow and develop a workable budget.
And while it is important to establish good credit, it is even more important to keep your debt under control. Is that correct?
Right. and, of course, to set up a contingency fund, which we call an emergency fund, equal to anywhere from 2 to 6 months of living expenses.
And it's important to start a regular savings program aiming to save at least 10% of your gross income. Right, Doug?
I think that's the most important thing of all, Linda. And, of course, you want to be investing for the long term when you're in your 20s and 30s.
And most individuals are anxious at this time to buy their first home, and it's an important decision, but you need to make sure that you can make that mortgage payment without straining your budget. Is that correct?
And, of course, in 20s and 30s, start saving for your children's college education.
And make sure to prepare a will naming a guardian for your children. Right, Doug? Now, when you get to your 40s and your 50s, there are some other things to consider. Your children are probably now in college, and you'll have to help them finance their college education. So if you didn't accumulate sufficient savings over their childhood, then you may need to take on some debt in order to help them. Is that correct?
Right. And at the same time, for folks in their 40s and 50s, you may find that your parents also need your help with financial matters.
And it's imperative in your 40s and 50s that you seriously start saving for your own retirement. And now's a good time to evaluate your investments. Right, Doug?
Lynn, you're absolutely right. And of course, take time to plan your estate.
And when you get into your 60s and beyond, before you retire, review your finances carefully. You may want to consider a part-time employment, both to supplement your income and to occupy some of your time. Is that correct?
Lynn, you're absolutely right. For folks in their 60s and older, they want to review their estate plan. They want to consider the use of a living will. They want to look at a health care proxy, durable power of attorney, and possibly a revocable living trust.
And in your 60s and older, reevaluate your gift-giving plans for your family members as well as for your favorite charities. Right, Doug?
Right. And of course, you want to provide your family with the details of your finances. And I would say, Linda, for most important of all, for folks in their 20s and 30s, for folks in their 40s and 50s, and for folks in their 60s and beyond, they should work with a certified financial planner who can see the whole picture.
If you'd like any further information, call me at the office in Raleigh. That number is 919-872-7000. That's 919-USA-7000. Well, Doug, there was an outstanding article about estate planning. And, of course, this one, which we found in the journal, a person recently went through a divorce. So if after a divorce or a split up, you need to split up your estate plan as well.
And yeah, you really need to have a plan to go through it.
Yeah, well, it's
the flip side of Lee's call. Yeah. Like, joy, 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 we're getting married.
Right, right.
And then, oops, it didn't work out.
The only thing I can guarantee every person who goes through a divorce is that one day you will die.
Yeah.
And knowing that you're going to die, after a divorce, you have to not only split up your assets, you've got to split up your estate plans too. And that is, that's very serious because if you've just gotten divorced, and I think we do have a couple of clients right now in that situation, at least one I can think of. If you have just gotten divorced, then you need to make sure that you have updated the financial arrangements that are going to kick in at your death.
And that's the big thing, updating the financial documents.
Yeah, because if not, it could result in certain assets and benefits unintentionally going to your former spouse.
Or even his or her family.
That's right. That's right. So you have to really realize that divorce isn't just splitting up.
That's right.
What we own now. It's what about at death? The lesson, of course, is to stay on top of your estate plans. And the most simple thing, of course, is you need to draft a new will. Now, here in our office, of course, we do all of the investment planning for the clients and all of the investment portfolios. And that, of course, is the starting point. But we also design the estate plans. And when there's a divorce, we're helping out design the new will. We don't write the will because we're not attorneys. But we often are helping the attorney gather all the information about the assets.
And that's because you want to make sure that the appropriate people have the copies of your documents and where to find them. And the key is to make sure that your estate planning documents, not only your will, but also your power of attorney, your health care power power proxies clearly reflect what your intentions are.
That's right, Linda. And that is so often, sadly enough, not what happens as life goes on. Let's take the beneficiaries as an example. Beneficiary designations. A lot of people don't know this. You know, they get really tricky. Let's say I'll give you an let's take a hypothetical. Okay. All right. First of all, let's say that my will says that I leave 50% to my wife and 25% of everything else I own to each of my two children.
Okay. Sounds simple.
All right. Very simple. And I've got an insurance policy, and the beneficiary of this insurance policy is my brother.
Okay.
All right. At death, does the will or the insurance policy, which one, who, what happens there with the beneficiary of the insurance policy?
Which one dictates where the insurance proceeds would go?
Right.
The insurance policy.
Even though the will said my whole is...
Yes, sir.
And see, we have to realize that. So beneficiary designations need to be reviewed and changed.
This is Deborah Lewis of Lewis Financial Management. Call us at 919-872-7000 to set up an appointment to speak about your situation. 919-872-7000.
Many people, you know, have a lot of different bank accounts, brokerage accounts, not only also insurance policies, even retirement accounts have beneficiaries, and annuities. These all name either a beneficiary or maybe it's a TOD account at the bank. Transfer on death. These are individuals to whom the ownership will transfer at death. And the proceeds of these accounts and policies, they actually pass directly to the named individual regardless of what the will says. And by the time the family members find out what happens, the money could already have been distributed and gone.
And I would say, Doug, Linda, that this is probably a point of clarification that needs to be always, reiterated. You need to know that what your will says is not where all your assets or how all your assets will be passed.
Maybe.
If you have named a beneficiary of an IRA, it will pass by beneficiary designation, not by your will. If you have insurance, just like Doug was saying, it's going to pass by the beneficiary designation, not by what's written in the will.
Even if you have that beneficiary listed as your wife and you divorced her 30 years ago,
right,
and it's grown to be $500,000, and guess who gets it? The
yeah.
present wife or the ex-wife?
Yeah, yeah.
And guess who's going to be really angry because no...
Both of those kids.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. So this is important. And
it
of course,
really
we do it all the time in our
yes.
office. We check beneficiaries, we change them and so forth. But now beneficiaries have to be changed in writing.
And that's the important part.
Yes. By filing new forms and sending them to the financial institution or the account or the policy and so on.
And we recently found out in an unusual situation, but in a situation that you really want to make sure that the recipient, meaning whether it's the IRA custodian or the insurance company, that they let you know that they have received it and agreed to the change in the beneficiary designation form.
Very good. That's exactly right.
This is Deborah Lewis of Lewis Financial Management. Call us at 919-872-7000 to set up an appointment to speak about your situation. 919-872-7000.
Now, Doug, tell us about the exception or the unusual situation.
Well, the unusual situation is with regard to retirement plans. Now, typically, the ex-spouse should get a court order, the spouse who's going through a divorce.
Okay.
Okay. Should get a court order called a quadro or a qualified domestic relations order that gives him or her the right to a portion of the other spouse's 401k. But it's very tricky here. And I remember a case, a client of mine years ago, and after the divorce, and yes, there was a quadro, the attorney for the in this case, it was a woman that came to me. She came to me for financial planning after she'd been divorced.
Okay.
And she had a quadro, but she hadn't, unfortunately, dealt with the financial planner beforehand. And what happened was that it looked like she was going to get half of the money, but it was going to be rolled and locked into her retirement account. So She couldn't get to it without a huge tax bite, and she needed it to live on.
Wow.
The end of the story is this, that you should have, if you're going through a divorce, you should use a certified financial planner before the divorce settlement is agreed on, and, you know, and especially with regard to the quadro, because you want to have the agreement, but whichever spouse is going to be receiving the half, if it's retirement, you need to at least make sure that it's going to be after tax, not before tax.
And wouldn't the two of you really agree that once a couple realizes the benefit of a financial planner being involved, it will tend to simmer things down and bring it down a notch and not be so confrontational? Because now you have a third party saying, well, here's the financial statement, folks. Here's the value of the home. It needs to either be bought and split in two, or the retirement plan needs to be quadroed or not. I mean, it just brings things down to the financial.
Exactly.
Here's what we own. And here's what we own.
You know, in some cases, yes, it can be really a very difficult, you know, just because of the work that we've done over the years. Families that are going through a divorce, it can really be emotional. It can be sad. Sometimes it can be very volatile.
Mm-hmm.
But by and large, they're amicable. And, you know, several of our clients that have gone through divorces, and then sometimes you have one of the spouses remarrying, and then they come back and, you know, they continue. But the most important thing, and I think the thing that I liked about this is that it is a reminder to every one of our listeners out there. At every stage, I mean, one day we're all going to be with the Lord. We don't know when our time is. But for the most part, this is an issue that is difficult to discuss because no one wants to talk about dying, because especially like the guy, the last caller, Lee, you're getting married. You know, you're thinking about your whole rest of your life together. And Doug, I'm just so glad that I've just loved you forever.
Oh, my goodness.
I haven't stopped loving you. So there. But anyway,
there's my mom and dad. But yeah, you bring a good point up, which is as your life changes, as the phases change, as the needs change, don't let the time pass by. So, you know, if it's every 2 years, every 5 years, definitely get a copy, make sure the accounts have the proper designation for the beneficiaries, and that you know where they are and the right people know how to find those forms.
Everyone have a great week.
You've been listening to Money Matters with Doug, Linda, and Deborah Lewis. Money Matters provides you with a personal financial hotline on any subject where money really matters. For more information, you can call Doug, Linda, or Deborah in Raleigh at 919-872-7000. That's USA 7000. Listen again next Saturday and Sunday at 5 p.m. for Money Matters with the Lewises on 680 WPTF.